Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, we're back for Digital Divination episode 22. I remember when we got to 10, that was a big deal. Now we're just blown past 20. And we didn't even say anything at 20, except other than it was 20 at the end of 2020, I think.
20, yeah, that's it kind of matched up that way. But
yeah, yeah. But yeah, so, I was wondering, how you been here this last week? I don't think we've chatted for a bit.
Oh,
what's new?
Oh, no. I think I've been fine. I've had, as I mentioned a while back, a fairly rigorous writing schedule on top of a kind of rigorous work schedule. So I feel like I've been at my computer a lot. That said, we're still doing some stuff around the house. We're trying to switch around which kids have which rooms in the house, turn our guest room into one of the kids' bedrooms, and the bedroom that she vacates and other kids going into, and so on, so on. So it's a lot of moving furniture and sort of, you know, a lot of cleaning up. I feel like we're spring cleaning a little early.
Wow. And so were the twins or the girls sharing a room? I'm just kind of
wondering. Right now the twins are sharing a room, and okay, we want to split them up.
Right.
One of the things that works really well with our son is to be able to say, hey, just go to your room. But then his twin sister's like, wait a minute, but now he's in my room.
Yeah.
All right, we'll get, split you guys up. But and then my oldest, who is just as just generally very resistant to change in any aspect of her life, was initially excited about moving into a new bedroom and has totally changed her mind on that. No, I want to go back to my old bedroom. Wait, but we already started to move some of my son's stuff in there. Anyway, we'll work it all out. But it's a lot of moving stuff around. And from my perspective, I'm always kind of riding the kids for trying to be better and more diligent about cleaning up and tidying their rooms and so on. This is a good opportunity. Like, oh, we've moved this bed. Look, it's a horror show under here. This is what we want to avoid.
Yeah, I spent all weekend again. So I did this last time and I did it again this weekend, moving things around in my garage and continuing to clean it up. And I've now, if I got it almost completely cleaned. I had a bunch of old stuff in my garage that had been sitting there for literally like 8 years that we hadn't used. They were like trailer hitch mounted cargo carriers and a bike rack and stuff. And so I put them all on the Facebook Marketplace yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And they all sold this morning.
Wow. To like one person?
So I put two things up for sale.
Uh-huh.
And one of the people wanted one of them, but it wanted them for a reason. I said, oh, I have this other thing you probably want more instead, but I haven't put it up for sale yet because I was going to clean it up. And sure enough, he really wanted it, and I told him he could have it only if he bought one of the other things too.
Ah!
So, and then just as we finished that, somebody else had been asking about the thing the first guy wanted. I said, well, he didn't buy it. Okay, I'll be there, and picked it up.
That worked so well.
I know. And the thing is, it's like I hadn't been getting rid of it because normally I would sell stuff on Craigslist.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, it's such a pain getting things going. Facebook Marketplace is so speedy, so fast. People respond. And everything I've done there has been so much quicker. It's just crazy.
I believe that. I've been on a lot of the local Buy Nothing group where mm-hmm. it's just a matter of, I don't need this anymore. And somebody's going to need it.
Yeah.
And I'm really surprised that the Buy Nothing group has an awful lot of stuff that, I think a lot of people would pay money for, mm-hmm. but it's just, hey, come take it off my hands and mm-hmm. it doesn't cost you anything. And then when I put up stuff, I feel like people think the same, like, wow, that guy's getting rid of something that people would pay good money for. So maybe I'm just going to ping it forward or ping it back, however you want to do it. But
right,
I really like the Buy Nothing kind of groups where you sort of circulate among people who have these needs. So
is that a local? That's the first I've heard of it, actually.
I think there are Buy Nothing groups locally in an awful lot of places. I'd moved out here before somebody mentioned, I think, a Buy Nothing Chicago, or maybe even a Buy Nothing Skokie, that put, you know, the suburb I was in. I'm like, oh, there might be one out in your area. And there is. I was talking to somebody in the grocery store about, that's the advantage of being in a small town, right? You talk to people in the grocery store about stuff. Yeah, yeah. So it turns out that we've got one out here too. So,
well, that's neat. You know, I give stuff away a lot to folks at my work. And I gave away a bunch of camera equipment to a guy. And he was really excited about it. It was kind of a light setup, and it was in this really big Pelican case, and it was just filling up my space. And I'd actually replaced it like a couple years later, but it was like such good quality stuff. I didn't want to just get rid of it, you know? So here's another photographer, give it to him. And then like 6 months later, he said, do you want this stuff back? My wife wants me to get rid of it. It's taking up too much space in my house. I said, no, that was taking up too much space in my house. Pay it forward to somebody else. But, you know, I think a Buy Nothing thing, especially if it's local, but, you know, people that, because I have some things that are just, they're not really worth a lot, but they're really good for the people that really need that kind of stuff. I don't know if that makes sense.
It's absolutely. Yeah. Right. So if you've got a certain kind of, even something as straightforward is, I've got a bunch of straps like this. I don't need them to strap stuff. Oh, I actually need straps just like that to strap my, you know, whatever together. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, neat. Hey, you know, I was chatting with Ryan of the network here recently, and he wanted to know if you'd be interested in doing something. And so I thought I'd put you on the spot here on the podcast, because I know Ryan will listen to this, and then that way he'll know your answer.
That'll save time you getting back to him. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So he's interested in – he's going to run something where he's going to take a player who's not familiar with a game system – and have somebody who's kind of an expert with it or really good at it kind of run that player through a group of players, and then kind of teach them the system. And this way people can see basically how new players kind of learn a new system kind of thing. And so there's this fella, his name is Luis Loza. Do you know him?
Oh, I've heard of that guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you have a cube really close to him. I don't know.
Four times. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's going to run a Pathfinder second edition one, which I'm going to participate in.
Okay.
So because.
Wait, but you have more than zero XP. You have like a handful of XP.
In Pathfinder second edition?
Right.
I don't know. I played like a little bit. I actually tried to design a character. I was invited to an Age of Ashes game, and I tried to design an inventor for it, and it took me hours and hours and hours. I never got to play because I was still figuring it out, and I'm still like, I don't know if I want to jump in because I don't really know anything. You know, I'm just figuring out the mechanics still. Anyway, so that's me. He's wondering if you would be interested in doing something similar for Starfinder.
Oh, that would be kind of fun. I've actually had a couple of very, very long running game sessions where I started it out with a group of people who don't know anything about the system. Well, let's give it a try. And they, you know, we end up staying together for a long time and having a lot of fun. So I've never done that for Starfinder, but I certainly could. This is just kind of a one session deal, right?
Yeah, I think it's a one shot. I don't know if it's like, I don't know how long he's looking at it. I don't think it's an extended. He's looking for an extended commitment, but he said something like a one shot, but it might be a one shot like scenario, one shot homebrew or something, not like just one session. But I don't know. We can clarify that with him. Hopefully, after he hears this and hears your interest, he'll get back to us. But that's something to look forward to. I think that for me, I think it sounds really cool because I think a lot of people that I play with expect that I'm just going to figure it out right away, you know, how to make a character and do all kinds of stuff. And I kind of understand the system and everything, but it's not really natural to me. And I would like to kind of get a chance to go in with other people who don't know anything and take it from that approach and learn it. And so I'm actually looking forward to it.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. I think participating on the GM side would be a lot of fun. I think I can talk about those experiences here on this podcast too, because it's sort of Starfinder related, especially to the extent it opens my eyes to, you know what? New players, you know, thought XYZ would be the case. And I never thought a new player might think that, but I can see now why they would, and so on, so on. So I don't know. I think that could be fun.
Yeah. Well, good. That's exciting. Anyway, so that was that. So for today, you know, last time we talked about kind of how we make characters and stuff, and I was just thinking that on the various Starfinder Facebook groups that I'm a member of, one of the most common questions I see is, hey, I'm a new Starfinder GM, or I'm going to be GMing Starfinder for the first time. I have a lot of experience in game X D20 game. Usually it's 5e or Pathfinder, but can anybody give some advice on somebody, an experienced DM or GM coming over to start for Starfinder? And so I thought we would kind of tackle that one.
Oh, I think that's a really good idea. I think it's a real important point, because I think we want to make sure that people see that GM skills are more transferable than people sometimes think they are.
No, I would agree. Now, you know, I'll tell you for myself, up until I started doing Starfinder, you know, I had not GM'd for a long time. And so my memory was, you know, what basically second edition, you know, was.
Right, right.
You know, coming in. But it didn't seem terribly different for me. You know, it's like there's some different rules. I think Starfinder is much more similar to Pathfinder and probably 5e. I don't really, I've done more 5e.
Closer to 3.5 than it
right.
is 5e.
That's what I was thinking, 3.5, right, yeah. Than it is to second edition Pathfinder, right? Second edition Pathfinder seems quite a bit different than Starfinder.
I think that's right. I think that's right. I would, as a first order of business, I guess, when anybody is thinking about coming into Starfinder, my advice would be, don't worry about the unfamiliar terms that you see, because somebody coming in from Pathfinder first edition, or from 3.5, or even from fifth edition for that matter, they're going to see words. If you're flipping through and preparing to run a game, you're going to see words that you don't understand. Words like bulk. And it talks about an item having a certain level. And wait, what's the difference? What's a CAC and an EAC and things like that? I mean, there's a lot of the game terminology is actually, once you know what it is, it's fairly straightforward to incorporate in the game. It reminds me quite a bit of the fact that when we had the conversion, people were going from 3.5 D&D to Pathfinder. They had to learn some of that too. What's a CMD and a CMB? Oh, well, that's your... Mm-hmm. Combat maneuver bonus to do stuff like grappling people and tripping them. Oh, okay, I get it. I mean, it's kind of as easy as that sort of explanation. And I think GMs can sometimes be a little bit intimidated by a lot of the jargon that's in Starfinder, and some of the things that they think they need to be a master of more than they do. Wait a minute, why does it matter that this is a level 4 gun and this one's a level 1 gun? Why does that matter?
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. I think in terms of the terminology and the stuff that's there, it's different, but the game mechanic isn't, you know, once you start seeing the analogies in the game mechanics, I think getting into the flow, especially if you're new to Starfinder and your players are new to Starfinders, you know, I think people should do like we commonly do in our podcast and I do with other folks is let's just look it up, you know, you know, we're dealing with poison. Yeah, I don't really know how that works. Okay, well, let's all look it up so we all know how it works.
Yep, and then read through. That said, I think there's a lot of the actual flow of the game that is the same, right? It's my turn. Okay, hey, which of these guys looks hurt? That's the one I want to attack. I'm gonna attack him, what I attack him with. I'm going to roll my dice, and if I hit, because I'm adding a bunch of numbers, I'm going to roll my damage, and he's going to lose that many hit points. And then the next guy over is like, well, I'm going to cast a spell, and I want to cast Magic Missile. All right, well, I have a sense of what Magic Missile does. I've been playing this game for a long time. Or even something like Dispel Magic. You're like, okay, I know I'm going to have to kind of roll off against the effect I want to dispel. So a lot of that actually is really transferable knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that I think one of the issues is when people see Starfinder in space, they know that there's magic. There's like your traditional martial weapons and stuff. And then there's the high-tech weapons. And I think maybe people get worried that the high-tech effects are much more complicated. And it's really just, you know, just a different class of weapon, you know, similar to you have bows or swords or whatever. You know, these are just, they do a different type of damage. They have a different modifier. I don't think it's really crazy. The thing for me that's more challenging, and even now, is actually what the spells do. You kind of mentioned that earlier. You know, there's certain staples that people use quite a bit, and those are pretty easy to figure out, Magic Missile being one. But as you get to higher levels, so I was just doing a really high-level game, and, you know, like level 12 is relatively high level. And the as a GM, the critters had all kinds of different spells that I hadn't seen, some of them coming from the new books and stuff. And so I had to look them all up. And so one of the things I would suggest for somebody GMing is if they're doing a society scenario, if they're doing an AP, or if they want to do a homebrew and incorporate stuff, you know, what I do for spells, even if it's one I'm pretty familiar with, I'll go ahead and create a Word document and cut and paste the descriptions. I'll just look it up on the archives of Nethys. I'll cut and paste the description for the spells so that when it comes time, oh, the bad guy gets to do something and they can cast this spell three times a day, I'll go ahead and pull up my description there so I know precisely what it's supposed to do, what type of effect it has, what type of save, things like that.
Yeah, that's one of the things. So with far less prep than that, my wife's standard go-to when she'd get something unfamiliar, like Starfinder, or the first couple times she ran Pathfinder First Edition, is her intent, all right, well, I know these are listed from least powerful to most powerful or most powerful. I mean, it tells you what spell level they are. It says, what is this person's turn? I'm just going to cast one of the most powerful spells I got. And she'll just look it up. She's like, all right, Prismatic Spray, that sounds powerful. Let me flip. Oh, that's good. Yeah, I'm going to cast Prismatic Spray and, you know, get it onto this group of heroes over here. Make your saving throws. So she'll kind of just ad hoc. She doesn't need to go through every spell. She knows she's going to start at the from highest level and work down, and she's not going to get more than three or four rounds at most.
that's a really good point. Well, sometimes, you know, like, and this is what happened to me, some of the spells, even at high level, they're like these really weird flavor utility spells that look, oh, this looks really cool, but it really, if in a battle, they would never use this, you know?
Right,
so,
right.
You know, so it's like, okay, so that's there for some particular reason. So here's their big powerful spell that they have. And then, okay, and then they'll probably use some lesser spells because those are at will or whatever. But I guess my point is, you don't have to know everything. You know, I've GM'd an awful lot of Starfinder, and I've played an awful lot. I mean, between the two, I was just figuring out, I probably done between GMing and playing close to 300 games. Mm-hmm. And I don't know most of anything. You know, I have to, you know, when I'm playing or when I'm making a character, I got to look it all up just to be sure, because too many things change as you go up in level. Or there might be a different flavor from a new book, whatever it is. And I don't have a problem, you know, saying, hey, okay, asking a player what that spell does if they're using it, or myself, if I'm GMing it and the monster's using it, to look it up. It's not a big deal.
Well, let's keep these two skills separate, right? You're talking about the difference between doing a lot of play as a player and stepping into this as a GM. Well, you know, when your focus is on how does the GM do it, if you're new to the game and transferring over, the other thing to keep in mind is if you're prepping, you can mostly just skip past the whole class chapter of the book. You don't need to know at what level Solarians get what Zenith Revelations or what a mechanics drone does when they get to, you know, second level or something like that. That onus is all on your players to know and to run and to know about for their characters. What you need to know is, what are the key points of the plot you're going to be running? What are the monsters like? What are the rules that the monsters do that are kind of tricky, right? If you got a monster that poisons people, like you say. So I think that there's actually a little bit of a paralysis that can set in for GMs. When they think to themselves, oh, I have to kind of know everything to be able to run this. Well, no, you don't really need to know anything about what the players need to know. That's in their wheelhouse. Let them do that.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. And I think sometimes players expect you to know things. And it's like, you know what? I've never seen that before. Can you explain that for everyone? And I do that all the time. But one of the things that I do find, though, is oftentimes you'll see an NPC where it'll use a certain skill. So, you know, there'll be a 10th level Solarian skill that's listed in there, and it'll just have words And so you have to understand that, oh, this is a class-based skill. That's where I look it up. And well, again, for me, I Google Starfinder and Word and see what pops up
right
to get it and then put that in my document for doing things.
Yeah, that's a good place to prep because, and the reason that that cuts down on your prep time and gives you some comfort is even if you have to look up what, a Solarian's flare power is, you don't need to know every Solarian power. This one mm-hmm. has flare and you need to know what that does, but that's right. it.
Right. And so rather than going through the whole, the whole class part, I just kind of, I know that's a Solarian thing. I don't know what it does. Let me check it. Especially now there's like, the higher level stuff, there's quite a bit. But when you're starting out, typically you're going to start at low level. And so that's all pretty straightforward. There's not a lot of spell casting. There's not a lot of disease or radiation or poison, which are kind of the trickier things to deal with. A lot of it is point and shoot or hack and slash and cast a couple of common spells.
Yeah. Although I don't want to dismiss how much there is that really makes Starfinder feel like Starfinder. There are a couple of things that you need to immerse yourself in if you're going to be a new GM that just don't work anything like you've seen before. And the two examples for me that come immediately to mind is Starship Combat, which is a very important and flavorful part of the game, but mm-hmm. has its own separate set of rules. And then on a smaller scale, the difference between hit points and stamina points and resolve
right.
points. That's kind of new, and it's important to realize the breakdown between damage you kind of dust off and damage that actually is lingering and causes you to bleed.
Well, and I think people pick up on that fairly quickly, and sometimes people might be confused. Do I take it off stamina or health points first? But once you get that distinction in your brain, basically you see you have this overall health pool. Just this half comes off first and is easier to recover. The other half comes off later, harder to recover. Now, recovering hit points is something that's a little bit more complex, I'll say. Mm-hmm. So the different ways you can do that. We've talked about that in a prior podcast. So that's something I would say that early on you might want to figure out. I would really caution a new GM, especially with a new group of players, about running Starship Combat, primarily because it's a little complicated, especially if you don't have the updated errata for the Starship DCs. It'll be really hard, especially at low level. And it's, there's so many exciting things about the game. I wouldn't want a group of players to be turned off because they had a bad experience with Starship Combat as the rules were laid out in the core rulebook.
I see what you mean. Yeah, I think that's probably true. I think when you do dig into the rules, having a latest updated version of the core rulebook, or even just kind of taking a look online to see mm-hmm. that you've got the latest rules, particularly for something a little more complicated like Starship Combat. Chases are a little bit like that too. Mm-hmm. Those rules are worth taking some of your prep time as a GM to read through and understand if they're going to be a key plot point in the adventure you're about to run.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned chases, and it kind of reminds me of something else that might be a little bit taking used to, I guess, is just kind of the skill challenges and the modifiers that you might have and the things that can stack and the things that can't stack. That's something I got screwed up quite a bit when I first started making characters, not understanding, with an operative's bonus they get is an insight bonus, mm-hmm. operative's edge. And that doesn't stack with any other insight bonuses you get. And I think that's a common thing players will have and GMs will have early on when they're looking at things. And it just makes your skill levels way too high at low level.
Right. Although, especially if you're coming from first edition Pathfinder, you are well-versed in mm-hmm. in the bonus hunt, right? Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, well, the Bard Song is a competence and that doesn't stack with the competence from a cleric's prayer blessed spell. Oh, but the cleric's prayer spell does stack with that, and so on so mm-hmm. on, so hunting around for different types of bonuses that mean different things is actually a skill you learn in earlier editions of the game that is actually very transferable to Starfinder. You just have to know in Starfinder there's just fewer bonuses to hunt around for. There's just fewer types to find.
Mm-hmm. Now, kind of a related question that I hear often is, what should we start with? What should we start with a new group? And, you know, for me, oftentimes it's like, I think the first book of some of the APs is good. Mm-hmm. I think Against the Aeon Throne and Dead Sons are both really good first books for new players. And I also think some of the early scenarios are good. But the nice thing about the AP books is it's kind of a, they're better tied together. There's more playing hours in a book. And I think by the time you get through the first book, you have a pretty good handle on the game mechanics, both from the GM side and from the player side.
Right. And you also have enough sort of loose plot elements to kind of keep driving the campaign forward. I talk to people, and I've done this myself, like, all right, well, we're going to get together. We're going to give this a try. Let's run kind of a one shot, one, maybe a one session or one or two session Starfinder Society scenario. Well, those, one of the advantages of Starfinder Society scenarios is that they have a beginning, middle, and end, and they wrap everything else up at the end. But if you're really trying to get into the flow of things and kind of onboard new players, you want to keep players' interest, one of the useful things to have is a plot that's set up with some loose ends to keep people curious, right? I want to come back for the next session. Wait, well, why? What was that guy trying to steal when we were in the middle of the firefight in the club? The guy that, you know, got out the back door. What is that all about? Wait a minute, why were these guys marching around in armor in the middle of the jungle on this backwards planet? What's going on there? I think that having a sort of an extended plot really helps keep player interest and engagement. And there are a lot of people who might think to themselves, both as a GM and a player, this is worth me spending more of my mental effort to figure out because it's going somewhere. Rather than, oh, this is just a one shot, I'm two thirds of the way through, and I haven't bothered figuring out this thing. You know, I'm gonna be done and watching TV in an hour and a half anyway. I'm not gonna devote the brain power to it. So I think that the first volumes of APs work really well for that. I'm really excited that we've talked about having standalone Starfinder Adventure. I think that'll really work well too, especially because it's a standalone first level starting Starfinder Adventure. So I think that's actually going to be really, really useful for exactly this thing you were talking about.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited about that. Do you know how long those will be?
I don't know for sure. I want to say we've kind of standardized 64 pages as our standalone adventure length of adventures. And I think Starfinder has picked up on that, just like we have in Pathfinder. For a while, it was sometimes 64, sometimes 32. But I think that Junker's Delight, it's called. I think it's 64.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm guessing that's going to be roughly 24 to 30 hours playtime, or roughly that?
That's about right.
Sounds a lot, about two AP books is what it sounds like, so...
Or one, you know, I don't, you know, about that. Somewhere between one and two is probably.
Oh, no, you're right. No, I was thinking scenarios typically are 30. AP books are closer to 60. Yep. So, yeah, so then if it's like one AP book, then that's probably between 12 and 15 hours then.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Right, three sessions of 4 to 5 hours each, roughly.
Correct, unless you got players who are just super goofing off. That's one of the things that's really hard for us to determine. How many sessions long is this? All right, well, it's not like watching a movie, right, where you kind of know the pacing. You can have all kinds of variance in the pacing. We got some people who can only get together over their lunch hours and some people who get together for a long weekend. And
So do you think it's good to have a session zero for the GM and for all the new players then, you know, since everybody's brand new to it?
Well, I think yes, absolutely. Although I think that session zero is a lot more important in something like a homebrew campaign that the GM, the starting GM, is thinking about. Because a lot of people will get into GMing. They're like, oh, I've got this great science fiction book that I read. Or, man, I love Guardians of the Galaxy. I want to run a game like that. A session zero is important to communicate to the players what the theme of the story that you're going to be telling is. APs do kind of that work for you, right? You're like, oh, we're Attack of the Swarm because we're going to play Starship Troopers, the game, and things like that. So but I think that the actual session zero to both see what your players are choosing so that you can adjust your homebrew accordingly, and to communicate to the players what your homebrew campaign is going to be like, are both really important elements. I think that a session zero is also helpful in any kind of campaign you're going to run. Mostly, though, it's to help the players get to know one another and build some cohesion and some backstory and make sure there's not overlap and an awful lot of very specific skills or abilities. I think session zeros are usually for the player. If you're asking, as a GM, should I have a session zero? I think, well, it's not going to hurt. It's certainly going to help your players, but it will help you if you've got something specific in mind that you're going to want to run and you want to be able to communicate that to your players. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No. I think that's, I was just thinking it's good for the players to see what other players are doing so that maybe they can weave their stories together. It's good for the GM to kind of see what the players are doing so they could maybe customize some of the things that they're planning on for the players and their background and their personalities. So that's one of the issues with a scenario and somewhat with an AP, that they're not really customized for your particular group. Now with a scenario, you're supposed to running, if you're doing for society play, you're supposed to run it as written, but if you're just doing it to introduce players, you could run it however you want. And the same thing with the AP, you can modify it and, you know, add new NPCs or have a different side quest that relates to one of your players. So I think they both provide a good framework. And I think for me, I'm thinking it, I'm really thinking I want to run with these Guardian of the Galaxy homebrews right now that you mentioned it. So I'm thinking, you know, it'd be really good to have a session zero with the players to figure out what type of characters they're playing so I know what to push forward, you know, from there.
Yep. Yeah, I think that, so I think generally, yes, it's the kind of thing that could be useful.
So what other things, what books do you think is a minimum a new Starfinder GM should have?
Core Rulebook and Alien Archive. And I think that's actually, whatever your choice is, that's the minimum, like the Core Rulebook and the Alien Archive. And I think that it's important to communicate to your players, especially if you're a new GM, new Starfinder GM, but you have experienced Starfinder players, to let them know kind of what your field of use is, right? Mm-hmm. Hold up the two books and say, this is what I have. This is what I'm going to use to start out with. And they're like, oh, well, I've got this back matter, you know, race that I want to play, and I want to use the stuff from the you know, options in the Starship Operations Manual and the Character Operations Manual, and man, this is going to be the best character ever. You can be like, whoa, hold up your two books. This is what I'm starting with, right? Mm-hmm. This is what I'm going to be playing, and this is what I'm going to learn first. And I think that works just fine.
Well, is it an issue if the players are going in a different, you know, going with some other books is the GM? I mean, the mechanics don't change too much, and then you just don't have a ready access to what they're doing. But if we're saying it's the player's responsibility to be up on that part, would that be okay?
Yeah, and I think that would work too, especially if you've got kind of a good field of trust you're building with the players, right? Mm-hmm. You know, okay, you handle your Sasathis biohacker guy you want to be, and you just do you when it comes to your character stuff. And I'm going to put you up against sort of the challenges that are here in this Alien Archive and, you know, different adventure opportunities as described here in this core rulebook, and then maybe whatever adventure you're going to get as well.
Do you have any other last minute thing or other additions here, do you think, that we should make sure we should talk about for new GMs?
Well, I think anytime you're switching systems, right, you're a GM who's used to an old system and you're trying to try out a new system, is to let just make sure that the players know and that you're comfortable with that. If you're switching over from 5th edition, you know, you tell people that. And occasionally when you say, oh, that's a good plan, you can go ahead and make that stealth check and roll it with advantage.
Right,
People know, oh, this new GM's saying that, and, you know, that there's no advantage in the Starfinder system is something that you'll kind of pick up, you'll learn, right? But you're going to have to rely on some old tools, and slipping back into some old habits isn't bad. That's just part of the learning process.
Yeah, I know. It's very common where I'm playing a game and the GM will do something and I recognize that that's a second edition thing or something else, you know, and it's because people play multiple systems. And I do think that the overall GM skill, the storytelling, the organization, you know, the analytics parts of doing it is very transferable. And, you know, it's a lot like, you know, like I teach college students, you know, and they learn basic things, skills that are applicable to lots of different classes. And I think that's awesome for them to kind of reach, you know, expand their horizons and try different topics rather than just stick with the same thing and just be really, really good at that one particular thing. And I think this is the same with GMs. I think it's really great to expand out. Now, that said, I have not expanded out a lot. I would like to do more, but I haven't had that much opportunity.
You're getting them. You know, if you have zero XP in the Pathfinder second edition system, you've got just the way you can help out with that. So learn a little more. So,
well, that's, you know, that's actually my goal is that in a couple of months that I will start getting up to speed with second edition and start running second edition games.
Well, that'd be great. I think you'd really like it. I think that the very precise and prepared play style that you have, right? You're going to know what everything's going to do. You got, like you say, you put your spells in your Word documents and the things you do. I think that will make you a really, really good Pathfinder second edition GM. You'll be able to kind of tell things sort of quickly. You'll be able to tell stories that are sort of, you know, quick and punchy and exciting. And, you know, I think the game would be lucky to have you, John, is what I'm saying.
Well, we'll have to see. I'm just looking forward to the different types of stories in Starfinder, you know? So it's like, you know, I've done a lot of Starfinder and I really enjoy the APs quite a bit. I was thinking about something else and, you know, one of the things I'm really into is superheroes. Mm-hmm. And man, you know, we should write a Hero Finder game.
Well, do you want to get that in line behind a Street Finder game, which is like a modern sort of detective stories? Or you want to slot it before a Trail Finder game, which is like a Wild West version?
I want Hero Finder right now.
Right, Hero Finder first. And then
the superheroes thing is such a big thing right now. And, you know, I've been such a huge comic geek for such a long time. And I've played quite a few other hero games. And I know we have Mutants and Masterminds, but I can't get anybody to play that. So I would love to, you know, if we could write a Hero Finder that used very similar rules to Pathfinder Second Edition, but introduced a lot of the space and magic stuff, plus some current technology things. I think it'd be so easy to kind of make that system, you know, work. And it would be, for me, it would be a lot of fun to do that.
There is a robust third-party publishing market out there that you could join with just this kind of product.
Yes, I know, but I'm looking for a partner. Are you interested?
Sure, I like comics as well as the next guy. I feel like what I'd be bringing is the handle on the rules and how you can kind of flex them and use them in an entertaining way.
Yes, so, and I would be bringing nothing, so I don't really know what I answer.
A desire to get the product out there. That's what
I
you've
know,
got.
But that doesn't count enough. I need to get better at writing stuff, I think. But okay, I'll start outlining it and we'll figure it out.
Okay. All right. We'll put it on the project list. But I don't know. Yes. I'm thinking Street Finder and Trail Finder in the back of my mind too. So,
well, you know, and I know there's a, you know, pretty robust third party Wild West out there, a D20 system. I don't know about a Street Finder one, a detective one type of thing.
Like a modern day sort of mystery conspiracy theory kind of thing.
Yeah. Do you remember Top Secret back in the day?
Yes. So, yep.
Are you thinking something like that? Or are you thinking
something like that? Or if you remember, there was there's a game called Alternity that Wizards of the Coast came out with that had like a modern supernatural mystery set in the current day kind of thing, where you're going after, you know, the adventures were things like you're going after the Mothman and other cryptids.
Okay, yeah. So I was thinking spy stuff, and you're thinking more supernatural, like Night Stalker kind of thing.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. But all should be available under the Street Finder umbrella, which is the modern day. Anyway, we'll get it all working. All right.
All right.
That's a lot to put into process. We'll do it.
I know. I didn't mean to bring that up, but I've been thinking about it, and it's like I got you on the spot here. So, all right. Well, I think that's it for today. I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination.